Remember when you were starting your career or starting something fresh? Or maybe you're starting now and it was exciting and new and you were learning and growing. You also thought that the company and your manager would help you guide your career path. Well, how's that going? My name is Todd Doherty and I host a podcast called Manage Me. I have 30 years of client, product, and operations experience from startups to retail to Fortune 100 companies. Listen in as I share real-world stories of business and life with solutions you can use. I'll have occasional fantastic guests that will share their insights as well. Come join me and learn real-world guides on how to be the most successful you and manage you. That's Manage Me Podcast and managemepodcast@gmail.com. Okay, welcome back, Manage Me Podcast. This is Todd Doherty. Season 3 continues, and today is actually going to be a bit off script, kind of 180 degrees the opposite way. So Season 3, as a reminder, is all about interviewing coaches and founders and executive coaches and transformational leaders. And so this voice you hear in a minute will probably be familiar if you're following the podcast, our Season 3, Episode 7 with Evan Smith, who is the founding member of Metamorphosis Management Group. He is a change and transformational coach and an executive coach. I interviewed him, and today he had a great idea. Well, I guess we'll see if it's great. We'll see if it works out the way we want it to. He's going to interview me, which I think is really cool. I'm actually kind of honored that Evan reached out to do this. Welcome back to the podcast, Evan.
Todd, thank you. As I said to you when we jumped on this morning, I'm delighted to have the chance to keep our conversation going and look forward to where we can take the exploration today as we dig into some things that maybe are specific about what you're doing and where your work is going and what your interests are. So,
yeah, and if you remember, folks, back on episode 7, Evan and I were sort of, I don't know, brothers of another mother or something. We've got some tangential GE, New England, Rhode Island, you know, some connections there. But we didn't know it until we met. And that's one of the things I really am enjoying about this season, which is season 3 and coaches, is I guess it's kind of in a way, you know, when you think about certain things, when you act in certain ways, the world, I guess, karma-like, you know, I'm meeting all sorts of fantastic coaches and executive coaches and founders of these leadership organizations, Evan certainly being one of them, and just having great conversations. So selfishly, I'm learning a tremendous amount. I hope you as an audience are learning as well. And I'm laughing because I don't know where this is going to go and I'm kind of nervous, but I shouldn't be. We'll take it from here. But Evan is going to interview me about sort of my work and what I'm doing. And I don't know what questions he's going to ask. So we're going to just go ahead and fire away. So I'm going to turn it over. I'm going to turn the hosting of this podcast, my Manage Me podcast, over to you, Evan.
Todd, thank you. And I am honored that you're willing and able and looking forward to this myself. I think perhaps a logical place to start, because so often when you're diving in here, the focus is on another person. I'm imagining it might be useful for folks listening, both those have been with you for a while and folks who might just be discovering in this episode. It might be useful to hear a little bit of your origin story, you know, the way you would cast that in a, you know, for someone meeting you perhaps for the first time, or, you know, following on for some of, you know, learning about you as an interviewer. How do you describe that? What gets you here?
Yeah, let me do that in two ways. One is I'll give you my I think 30 second or so elevator pitch that I am refining and using lately. But also after that, let me give you the backstory and a little bit about it as well. So the executive pitch or the executive summary is Todd Doherty, Manage Me Coaching, and I help emerging leaders, as I call them, overcome really three chasms in their career. So I'm mostly a career-focused executive coach, but as you can imagine, that translates to much more than just their career. But the three chasms, as I call them, are your entry-level chasm. So this is, you know, high school, college, back entering, re-entering into the working world. And frankly, most of that is you know, free coaching, pro bono coaching, right? Most high school students, you know, hopefully this doesn't sound egotistical, but most high school students couldn't afford me, right? They're not going to pay a couple hundred dollars an hour to talk to some old guy who's a veteran in the industry and been around probably way too long. But I have a lot to share there because of my experience of interviewing. So I volunteer at the Forsyth County where I live in the high schools, and I do for juniors and seniors. I'm part of a program where we do mock interviews. And that has helped. I've interviewed hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of kids in high school who are putting together their first resume, who are learning to interview for the first time. And we give them mock job descriptions and they apply and interview for these roles. And I've learned some of the pitfalls that they don't know. And so after interviewing hundreds and hundreds of kids, I've got a bit of a worksheet and a bit of a program there. The second chasm is what I call the individual contributor to manager chasm. Back in the day, most of our organizations would do a lot of coaching around that. How do you become a manager? What's the difference? How do you lead? How do you not micromanage? How do you measure? I have found over the last several years that I'm not saying companies don't do that anymore, but fewer and fewer do that. And instead, typically, they take their best performer in a group, promote them to be the manager, and assume that that new manager is going to take all those great skills of how they performed and distribute those to, you know, share those with their team. And the whole team's going to be fantastic and top performers. That rarely works out, to be honest, because managers, sometimes new managers, they've never managed before. They don't know how to delegate. They don't know how to manage other teams and keep people motivated and individually coach them to be their best, because you don't mass coach all in the same way. It's an individual basis. The third chasm, if you choose, it's kind of like Mission Impossible, is that executive chasm. That by far is the widest and deepest. And the first two, you can develop skills to overcome. The third, executive chasm, is totally different. That is more political. That is more social. That is more relationship built. You actually get pulled across that chasm. You don't get to jump across or build a bridge over that chasm in a way. So that's the three areas that I mostly help people. And I call those emerging leaders. And those are emerging in three different ways. But why did I do that? So over the years, I have found, certainly I was an individual contributor, but I've very early on started to lead teams, and I really enjoyed, didn't know that then, but really enjoyed the coaching part of it. The, you know, tell me what you want to do in life and let's figure out how we blend that into your work, and let's help you try to find, you know, what is probably overused these days of your purpose. Sometimes your purpose isn't necessarily your occupation. And so I really, really love working with people to help find that purpose. And my that's the origin, but my journey here is, you know, frankly, overcoming my own imposter syndrome of why would someone listen to me? I'm not technically an executive coach, although I am finishing up my executive coaching certification. So I'm almost nearly officially an executive coach. More to come on that, which, by the way, will just be a piece of paper, right? You still have to have all the skills and experiences. And that's what people kept telling me is you've got, you know, decades of whether it's startup or Fortune 1 GE experience, you've got all in between. And so you've seen a lot of stuff. So why do you feel like you can't help other people? And I'm like, yeah, you know what? You're right. And so that's where this all started. And I'm still in the corporate world, but I have one foot sort of in this coaching world, and we'll see where it goes.
I love this. What a great sort of overview, and I'm really, really intrigued with your description about these chasms, a very evocative term for that key transition moment. And it really describes a transition moment. Like once you've crossed over, you can't unsee. It's not like you can't go back.
That's true. That's right. Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about, and maybe this is a appreciating that you do this work for people across their whole lifespan, starting with kids. I guess tell me about what you see here around these challenges in transition. You talked a little bit, for example, around CASM 2, the individual contributor to managers, where you see companies providing less support. What do you see as the challenges for getting to the edge of that cliff and then, moving across or moving to the other side?
Yeah.
What are some of the challenges you see there around that transition?
There's so many, but one, let me talk about a few, right? Maybe there may not be one, but let's talk about a few. One is literally just recognizing that transition, right? Just stepping back for a moment and saying, okay, it depends on exactly where people are. Sometimes they want to make that move, right? And and other times they have made that move, like they've been promoted, right? So there's sort of each side of it. There's I want to be on the other side of the chasm. And then there's the, I am on the other side of the chasm. And sometimes it's actually, you're in the same place. You don't know what you're doing, right? You're on either side of the chasm. The first is wanting to be, right? And so what are some of those skills? You can't just go to your manager and say, hey, I want to be promoted, right? How do you do that? How do you go above and beyond in your current role, show you are leading, right? There's a lot of folks that are saying, well, I can't lead my peers. Really? Why not? Right? Why, not directly, right? You're not managing them. You're not, on the HR chart, but you can still be a leader. I'm actually part of another organization called F3, and it's all about, men in community leading. It's sort of exercise based in a way, but the real intent there is to develop leaders. And we do that in a somewhat subtle way of having them lead a large group of men in workouts and just kind of thrust them out there. And we coach them on how to do that. But that doesn't necessarily happen in the corporate world. So there's the, how do I become a manager leader? And we could go down a rabbit hole of what's the difference between a manager and a leader. So I'm using those interchangeably, but they're really not kind of different. But and then the other is, I've been promoted, and what do I do from here? Because what worked for you, the way you managed yourself, which is the whole concept of why my company is called Manage Me Coaching, how you manage yourself isn't the way you manage other people. It's not. I talked with a founder of a company a couple of weeks back and coaching him, and one of his frustrations is he said, why aren't my employees, we're a small kind of agile startup, it's fun, I make it fun and exciting and challenging, why aren't they working as hard as me? Well, because they didn't found a company. It's not their company. And they're never going to work as hard as you. They might, that would be awesome. And that'll probably be a rock star employee, but you have to realize that they're not invested as much as you. You've part poured your heart and soul and remortgaged your house and all that stuff. They don't have that. And it was I guess you're right. And I said, that's the difference between managing and leading. Where leading, you have to motivate and you have to show them the vision and remind them of the vision and get them excited about the vision and give them a mission to achieve that vision. And that's really hard. Like that, you just want to execute. You just want them to do their job, but you have to show them why. And so those are a couple of the reasons why, or the situation that people are in to get from individual contributor to manager / leader. I almost feel like I always think in Planet Threes, I almost put another chasm in of right after you leap over that individual contributor to manager, there's another smaller chasm, maybe bigger chasm around leadership, which is, yes, which is different than managing.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. You're right. That is a big topic. And I think certainly, maybe we'll go there. I'm intrigued with, you know, as you talk about this, part of what happens, as I listen to you talk about this particular chasm is, it sounds like what you're recognizing or naming, partly at least, is the shift in perspective that's required, where your field of view, perhaps originally, you know, as an individual contributor, is more narrow, more around your own work. And what I'm hearing you begin to describe is, how do you begin to recognize, understand, seek out what it might be like from the perspective of the people that you're now attempting to manage or influence or lead, you know, as you may be moving into promotion? Or to your point, how do you do that? How do you make that shift in perspective, even, you know, when you're in an informal role where you're sort of preparing to become a manager? That shift in perspective about sort of empathizing, understanding, you know, I'd love to hear you talk a little bit more about that
that shift in mindset, right? It's so important. And it's a shift in mindset without going to the extreme of being egotistical, right? I am the leader, right? No. So one of my kind of epiphany career moments was many years ago, and I heard this term for the first time. And I was just telling someone this morning, you know, like when you buy a new blue truck, right? Whatever the brand is, right? And all of a sudden you see blue trucks everywhere, the same blue truck,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And I can't remember the term for that. There's a term, and I meant to look it up before we got on the podcast, and I didn't prioritize it and look it up. But there's a term for that, and I'll try to look it up. But it's just, you're now aware of blue trucks, right?
Yes.
And so this term I had never heard before, and then I heard it, and then I heard it everywhere. And the term hit home for me as it was described. And I was in a executive management meeting, and someone started talking about servant leadership and defining servant leadership and how you lead, you're leading others, but through service and through empathy. And I'm like, well, that's what I do. Like that's what, and I had never labeled it anything. I just thought that was my style of leadership. And I realized that, oh my goodness, that's what it's about. It's servant leadership. And that mindset for me of, yeah, it's not about me. It's about my team, and it's about the company's goals. And how do I connect those and provide vision and mission? And then on an individual basis, right? Because everyone has individual skills. How do I organize the team? How do I challenge each individual? How do I motivate each individual accordingly? So I'm serving them for their purpose, but also serving for the, whether it's the department, the organization, or the company, whatever the big why is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was for me like this massive, oh my goodness, I think I just figured out how I click and how I work. And I told a couple people that, and they're like, yeah, servant leadership. Like everyone talks about that. I'm like, I don't know, maybe I've missed it, but I now understand. And I don't use that term a lot, but I use the theory and the practice of that mind shift of individual contributor. And let's take those two, right? As I cross that second chasm of individual contributor to manager, remember the two parts. One is I want to go over that chasm. The other is I'm over that chasm. Let's start with the first one, which is I want to go over that chasm, and I'm an individual contributor on a team of individual contributors, and I report to a manager. How do I servant lead there? Well, you remember, make your boss look good. You know, that helps, right? How can I help my manager? What are some of the things that he or she needs, and how can I help? And when I get asked a question of, you know, go create this report, I can just create the report and hand it back, or I can create the report and think, why why is she asking me for this report? What could she need this report for? Oh, she probably needs it for that board meeting. What other topics are important for that board meeting, right? How do I go a little bit above and beyond, come back with, hey, here's your report. But you know, I was thinking you might also want A, B, and C, right? So you're, it's not, it, people may not see that as leading, but you're helping your leader, right? Your manager leader.
Right.
The other, right. Same thing with your team. Like, how can I help my team? And this, you have to be careful, right? So some team members might not like this, but you know, how can I help the team? What can I share with them of, hey, I found this process that I created really helpful when I'm working with customers. Hey, you guys might want to use it too, right? Instead of the, let me hold this hostage and now, yeah. I have something more valuable and maybe my manager will see that and promote me because of it. It's actually the exact opposite. Your manager wants you to come up with ideas and grow and make things easier and simplify processes. And so if you can share that with your team and then, you know, ensure that your manager realizes that you're helping there, which usually, yeah. happens naturally, but sometimes you have to sort of seed that garden a little bit. Because if you go yelling and screaming, waving the, hey, look at how great Todd flag is, that usually doesn't work out for you very well either.
Right. But
those are some of the, you know, bottom line is a mind shift first. Second, it's how you execute in a way that's really not self-serving. It's really, yeah. serving others, but the recognition comes back to you of, hey, look at what Todd's doing. He's really thinking beyond what his current role is and how he can help others. Boy, if we give him a little bit more training and responsibility, wow, that'll be really powerful. Let's put him in that official capacity as managing, yeah. a team instead of this unofficial capacity. Boom, yeah. there you have it. You've now jumped over that chasm.
Right. I love that. I mean, what you're describing is a way to be influential beyond your own individual role. When you start imagining, taking the point of view of your boss, as you said, and beginning to imagine what it is, you know, what the pressures might be, what the specific requirements might be for the work that you've been asked to do. I mean, I think in addition to what you've described, sort of anticipating what some of those needs might be, that's that moment of beginning to imagine, hey, this is for that board meeting. What do I know that's going on around that board meeting, right? Are there key decisions that are going to be made? And using that as an opening for a conversation, perhaps, right. With your boss or supervisor to say, hey, I imagined you might also need X and Y. I'd love to hear your thinking about what's going to be important as you go into this. Like, I imagined X. Is that right? Or tell me what else is going on. It opens up a conversation together, I think, that could to get you out of the individual contributor role you're in and,
absolutely.
Sort of position you in a different space.
Yeah. That's another great topic, right? There's the execution piece, right? I need to do, yeah. my job. I need to do, I always say you know, people say, you know, dress for the job you want, right? It's also, yes. act the way you execute for the job you want, right? So you start to have those above and beyond, mm-hmm. conversations and activities, and you might get a few stretch projects of, hey, I know this isn't your job, but I need this for the board meeting. Can you help me with this, right? Those kinds of activities. And yes, it's more work. Yes, it's harder. Yes, you might have to work a couple extra hours. Yes, but hard work is the only way to get ahead. There is no shortcut. There absolutely is no, right. shortcut. Now, yes, on occasion, you know, you'll see somebody get ahead when they didn't do anything. But I would say that's not as permanent of a position as when you've earned it and worked that way. The other piece is that relationship with your supervisor, manager, leader, right?
Yeah.
Hey, Todd's really leaning in here and helping me. Wow, he's got some good ideas. Wow. And, you know, let me leverage that. And then that conversation of, hey, that next role is so much easier, right? Instead of, yeah. cold coming in, it's like asking for a raise, right? It's really the same process too. Raise, promotion is, you got to earn that way before you ask for it. And right. I always told, right. people when I was, you know, giving promotions, I would always want others to say, wow, finally Todd promoted that guy, right? Because he's been doing the job forever. I'd rather have that than, why isn't Todd promoting this person? Why? Well, you don't get the job, then do the job. You do the job, then get the job. And that's very difficult for people, again, typically early in their career, to understand that. Like, I've been working really hard for 2 years and I don't understand why I didn't get that promotion. Well, showing up and doing your job is different than showing up, doing your job, asking harder questions, making sure you're networked and you have a good relationship with those people that will promote you, and all those things, totally different. A real shock one time when I was at GE, actually, I was at there for a number of years. And I'm going to name Steve Mandyka. I hope he's listening to this conversation. He really reset my expectations one time where he said, every 2 weeks I get a paycheck. And after that, clock starts over and I'm a consultant to GE and I have to prove my worth every 2 weeks. And he said, on my resume, it may say I've worked at GE for 12 years. All that means is I showed up for 12 years straight. It doesn't mean anything about, it doesn't show anything about what I did, how I improved the company, all my results. And I think I was, well, much younger than I am now, but fairly young. And that one, that was another one of those pivotal moments of, wow, what a really fantastic way to look at how you execute in the corporate world. Mm. And just showing up isn't going to get you the promotions and the more money and all those things that you may want. And by the way, I'm saying all this, some people are fine. And there's nothing wrong with being an excellent individual contributor. These chasms I'm talking about are for folks who want to advance their career in a different way and manage people and learn some different skills. But you don't have to do that. I know some really fantastic and super smart people that have been in their particular role for a long, long time. And they are the go-to people for those roles and are mission critical to the business. And that's just as important too.
Yeah. Yeah. So many great hooks in there. I'm struck by a couple of them. What I hear you describing almost is how valuable it can be to stay in the moment. This is an eerie aside. My first manager at GE said to me exactly, was it Steve? Is that his name?
Yeah, Steve Mandyka.
What Steve said, he said every 2 weeks you get a paycheck and the clock starts over. I mean, it was
like that jarring moment, like, oh, wow, you're right. Yeah. I have to really add value every day. Yeah.
Yeah. And what does that really mean? I mean, in a world like the one we're living in today, where business conditions are changing so frequently, there's a lot of dynamism, demands, challenges, uncertainties, that sort of revisiting the question about what adds value on a regular basis, every 2 weeks or other time frame, really, really important. It's almost how do you help someone sort of get into that place where they have this is a description about being in a growth mindset sort of place, right?
Yes.
What's going on here? What's valuable here today for us? What do we, rather than sort of performing my role in a lockstep manner or following the checklists or just clicking through the procedures, which is doing the job, what are the bigger questions, of what's going on here and now? And from this point of view, I'd love to hear you riff on that a little bit more, if you're willing.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, by the way, this podcast stuff is harder than it looks, isn't it? Isn't it? It's like, wow, I have to listen and I have to plan questions and I have to
exactly
see ideas. Anyway, you're doing a great job. Great job. I imagine in your Metamorphosis Management group where you talk about tangible business results, right? Mm-hmm. So as an individual contributor or an emerging leader, you're absolutely right. Thinking about how do we make money, right? It's been interesting, coaching individuals and they're saying, well, I'm trying to do this or that. And I go, hey, let's step back. Tell me, how does your company make money? And it's really jarring. Like, well, we sell these things. Okay, you sell these things, but how do you make money? Like, is it just that? Are there other revenue streams? Like, yeah. And so you start to get that business mindset. Like, and I always say, you know, your piece of the business, run it like your business, right?
Yeah.
Like, even if you don't have P&L, profit and loss responsibility, think about it, plan it. That is actually one other piece of advice in my career. So, you know, business degree, all that stuff. And, you know, I'm okay with numbers. I'm good with numbers, but I subconsciously avoided the financial discussions.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, nah, that's finance. And, you know, I knew my number and all that stuff, but I would tell you, if I could go back in my career, I would pair up with finance. I would dig way deeper. I would know those numbers early on, because as I'm going throughout my day, now I know, oh, wait, if we do this, that's going to help this product and that margin. And boy, we're suffering there. And, you know, those are some of the views and decisions as you move up the ladder that you start to think and plan about. And then it's, well, how do we execute on, what could we do to execute better here and here so that we can drive that margin? And so you got to start with that big picture, as you said, right? And then as you move up the ladder to, you know, that executive, you know, getting over that chasm, that's one of the big changes, is it's less about the day-to-day activity and managing people directly from a task and more about, wow, I see the future of these numbers, and this 3 years out, this doesn't look good. So what do we start today that's going to help me 3 years from now? It's just a different purview. And so that's also part of that executive chasm of, you go from managing your little fiefdom of this department to usually, you know, bigger. And the change there is, you go, you know, individual manager over that chasm to manager leader to, ironically, people think it's about, and it is still, I'm not saying you don't manage people and work with people, but it's also much more about future vision, creating vision, managing finance, and knowing those numbers like back of your hand, and how one lever affects another lever. You know, one number, one activity is going to affect another activity. And that's some of the big major shift mindset and execution wise as you go through and over those chasms.
Yeah. Yeah. We're still on the chasms here. There's one other topic on these that I'd love to explore with you. One of the things, I mean, we've talked about sort of helping someone into this shift of mindset where they're seeing things from the point of view of another, you know, beginning to your last point, beginning to understand the economic model for how the company makes money, those sorts of things, what my boss needs. One of the things that I see often in my work with leaders and coaching is that I believe I, as a newly promoted manager, or I, as someone who stepped into a new role managing others, I believe I've been promoted for all my expertise that got me to this point. And to some extent, some of what's required in that new job is letting go of all of my subject matter expertise to do a different job. And I would love to hear sort of, you know, tell me about what's involved here when you're working with someone and how they make that step from their old identity as whatever they were into this new. Tell me about this process of letting go.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, you reminded me of a story. My first day as a manager, right? I was so excited. I was finally going to be in the regional vice president meeting, and I'm going to lead a small team. I had moved from Connecticut to Charlotte, and it was being announced that I was going to be, you know, taking over this team. And I was really excited, and it was a big deal. It was kind of a big deal in my career. And I go in this meeting, we're sitting around this table, and, you know, I didn't even know what imposter syndrome was at that point, but I knew I felt weird. I felt like, do I deserve to be at this table? Boy, these people are so smart, and they know the numbers like the back of their hand, and I don't. And that, you know, announced it and congratulations and stuff. And we started kind of going into the execution mode, you know, decisions we need to make, whatever. And I kid you not, Evan, I kid you not. There was a, I wish I remember what decision we were making, but there's a particular decision we were trying to make. And somebody was like, you know, we were like split. We had no idea. And somebody, I swear to you, reached in their pocket, got out a quarter, and they said, heads or tails, let's make a decision. And I was like flabbergasted. Like, wait a minute. These folks don't know any more than I do. I would literally in my mind, I was like, well, we should just flip a coin. And then somebody actually did it. And so for me, that was this, again, one of those, you know, career epiphanies, right? Like, oh, wait a minute. I don't have to have all the smarts that, you know, that I assumed I had to. I had this imposter syndrome of, I don't know everything that everyone else does. Well, you know what? None of it do. Like everyone sitting around that table has in some shape or form that same thought of, I don't know everything that's going on here. They're talking about the flux capacitor and I don't even know what that is. And right. everybody has that. And, you know, I don't really like the fake it till you make it kind of phrase. I don't like that. I think more of just recognize that it's okay not to have all the answers. It's actually even better. You know, when I coach people, you know, particularly with customers and clients, but also it works internally with managers. Although you only get to say this once on a topic, but the first thing is saying, I don't know. I really don't know. And just admit it. Don't try to fake it. Don't try to make up something because that's bad. Now you're backed into a corner. One, right. I don't know. Two, I am going to take ownership. You asked me, I will figure it out. I will deliver. Three, and I will get back to you. Fill in the blank with a reasonable time frame, right? Tuesday by noon, right? And right. By the way, if you kind of under promise and over deliver, if you get them to Monday afternoon, that's even better. But so many people are afraid to do that. And if you do that and you get berated and yelled at and all that stuff, you're at the wrong place. Right? Mm-hmm. You that's not an environment you want to be in to not be able to say, I don't know, but I'm going to own it. And I'm going to back to you by a certain time frame that's reasonable. If that's not acceptable, you brush up the resume, call me, we'll figure it out.
Right.
So kind of getting back to your question a little bit is, you know, you don't necessarily have the skills, and I don't have the stats in front of me, but particularly women and men, when they see a job description, women will look to see, you know, they'll look at the 10 qualifications or requirements in the job. And they don't, if they have 9 of them, they won't apply for the job. Men, they'll look at the 10 and they'll go, yeah, I got half of those, and they'll apply for the job. Right. I don't know what it is exactly, but whether you're male or female, to me, it doesn't matter. If you had all 10 of those qualifications, don't go for that job. You've already done it. You already know how to do it.
Right.
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 You want to learn, you want to grow, you want to be challenged, vice versa. If you're a hiring manager, don't expect the person you're hiring to have all 10 of those qualifications and nailed. Because if they do and you hire that person, you're going to be hiring someone else within 6 months. So that person's going to move on. So definitely go in with, again, it's mindset, right? Go in with that mindset of, I'm going to execute on what I can execute on and I know, but I'm also here to learn and grow. And the other third is, I'm here to contribute too. Just because they have this 10-step process doesn't mean it's right and it's perfect and it's the best thing. I'm going to see if I can help improve this process or procedure or revenue or whatever we're talking about as your scope of responsibility. So that's the other thing is it's a lot about mindset. It's a lot about getting out of your own head. So I talk about, you know, coaching individuals in their career and stuff, but a lot of this is also, who told you couldn't go for that job? Who told you don't have those responses? Oh, you told yourself that. Oh, yes. Okay. Right.
Yes.
And believe me, I sound like, you know, like an expert and, you know, like I don't do that myself. I certainly do all the time. Well, I can't do that. And then I'm like, wait a minute, I'm telling myself I can't do that. And that's a big piece of it, particularly. And I know, you know, but in the coaching world, a lot of the time you don't know the answer as a coach, but you're asking those questions. And you're prompting and you're having those discussions and you're getting that person out of their own head. And, you know, the vast majority of the time they go, oh, I know what I need to do. And you're like, well, yeah, exactly. Right. But that's what a coach is about, because that's why you hire a coach. And it may sound trivial and you think you can do it yourself and you can coach yourself out of those ways. And certainly you can on some occasions, but I'll tell you, it's much faster. It's much bigger of a perspective. It's, leveraging, you know, someone else's experience, right? It's hard to change your own view of the world through your own view of the world. And so if you have a coach or mentor or fill in the blank or whatever you'd like to call that, that partner to help you in your personal world and your professional world, cannot say enough about having a partner to do that. And it can't be your wife or spouse.
Yeah.
It can't be a close friend. They're too close to you. They're only half a step out of your brain. You need to have someone fully out of your brain and not partial or biased in any sort of way.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm keeping an eye on the clock here. I have two other areas I really want to explore with you, and both of them could be rich. So I'll look to you to let me know around timing, how we're doing. But the first one is, you know, when you, I love the elaboration on your process that you've begun to share here and how you might work with people who are approaching a chasm or stepping over a chasm. I would love to hear if you could describe, and certainly without attribution or specifics, I would love to hear you describe sort of what might be some archetypal moments when you knew that you had, in conversation with someone else, you had done some great work, like somebody made a major shift in perspective. What, tell me, can you describe those in sort of archetypal form or, you know, anonymous form? What were those moments when you knew you were doing great work? It landed for you and you could see that it was landing for them.
Yeah. Wow. Great question. Let me start with one that really just happened about 2 weeks ago. Had a client call me, and you know, so the way we work together is, you know, just quick 30-minute call. Usually goes longer than that because I'm a big talker. But 30-minute call. Hey, tell me what's happening. Tell me where you are. Tell me, you know, where you want to be. You know, that kind of high level conversation. And we did that, and we had a follow up phone call. And the root of the challenge was, took a new role. Well, same profession, sort of program manager, and took a new role and realized, well, he didn't realize at the time, but as we talked through, you know, he took the new role. He left the old company because he was under-resourced, underappreciated, wasn't getting promoted, all those things. Took a new role, assuming he would be appreciated, he would get promoted, he would be valued. And he found this, it's just different company, same position, right? I'm not being, you know, I'm under-resourced, I'm undervalued, I'm not being promoted. And I said, well, let's step back here. And he was actually saying, well, maybe I should leave this company. I'm like, whoa, hold on. This could, two dots don't make a pattern, but three would be a pattern. So let's, before you make that leap, let's talk about what's happening. And a couple things. So one is I sensed it, but I didn't realize it until the end of the call. And you'll hear what I mean in a minute. Talking to him, because it was over the phone, he was very, very low. You could just feel he was really challenged and he really was frustrated. And he wasn't mad or angry, but just you could hear his voice was very low and he really was unsure and, you know, kind of, you know, you could hear the breathing, right? Like kind of exasperated. And we talked through, well, okay, so you're on this big project. It's highly visible. You came in and took it over. So you weren't the one that formulated the plan or priced out this deal with this customer you're working on. And I'm trying to be kind of vague because people could figure out the name of the company, all that stuff. And your manager is pushing you, but it doesn't sound like they're yelling and screaming because they realize that you've taken over this project, but it's like a no-win project. There's no way you're going to hit the deadline unless you have these things, more resources, more time, smaller scope, right? It's always that three-legged stool, right? One of those things has to change in order to meet this deadline. And you've talked to your manager and manager's like, hey, we don't have the resources, right? But it's what you're doing is you're putting it all on your back and you're going to try to single-handedly save this. And you told it, you said it 4, 5, 6 times. You can't, it's not possible. So step back, write down all the scenarios that could happen and the results, right? Do nothing, fail your project, probably lose this client for life. Bad, very bad. Mm-hmm. You know, other extreme, go back to the client and say, this was scoped wrong. We either need more time or more money to get more resources. And here's the, if we don't do that, here's what's going to happen. And he's like, I've kind of done that. I'm like, yeah, but you need to formally do it. You need to really get that out in front of your manager and say, listen, even if we do nothing, I need to tell you that these are the options that I've considered. I'm recommending this option, right? So always come in with, I've reviewed my options. I'm recommending an option. And if it's still a no, I know you feel passionate about the role and all that stuff. All you can do is your best. And you've let them know the consequences. You've given them options. You've made recommendations. And so if it fails and it goes in the toilet and it's a disaster and you lose a client and all that stuff, you can confidently say, I told you 6 months ago this was going to happen. I gave you the, don't take this out on me, right? And so anyway, we worked through a lot of those tactical details. The end of the call, voice was up. I can do that. And I've got some of those numbers already. And we talked through it and we were just about to hang up. And I said, hey, think about beginning of the call versus the end of the call.
Okay.
Think about your voice, your tone. And it kind of occurred to me, I hadn't realized it. He was almost literally a different person. He had hope, right? Sometimes that's all you need is hope, right? You may not have the answer, but you have hope that you have a way out or you have a way toward your goal. And he kind of went, wow, you're right. I mean, I was really, I don't want to use the word depressed. I don't know. That's maybe an extreme, but he really was like, that was so worthwhile to just talk through the options, talk about the pros and cons. And again, same thing. Why do you talk to a coach? Well, that's why you have this impartial, right. What if you did this? What if you did that? What would the consequences be there? And you know, to answer your question, I really hung up the phone and I just had this great smile. Did I solve his problem? No. But did we somehow derive hope and a path towards a goal? I'm not saying we hit that goal, but towards that goal? Yes. And you could literally, I wish we were in the same room, we were over the phone, but you could literally feel his energy change from the beginning of the call.
Yeah.
It was really fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I love that. Both sort of, it sounds like a practical roadmap for going forward and also a different energetic state at the end. And I'm sure from his side of things, more commitment, but more willingness, and ultimately a much more productive future for him in pursuing the course that you helped him lay out.
And awesome. We probably all have been in that situation. And I even said to him, listen, if you went to your manager at the beginning of the call, it would sound something like this. You know, I'm really, this project's kind of in the toilet and I'm really trying hard or whatever. At the end of the call, you go into your manager and say, hey, you know, we have a challenge. These are the five options that I've come up with. Some are really, really challenging and some I think are possible. I need to talk to you about those. Let me lay these out. Do you have some time now to walk? Totally different conversation with your manager.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And total different response probably from your manager on, you know, the first one would be like, I'm just going to steamroll this guy. I'm just going to, you know, tell him no. And he's going to continue on. Right. Versus, okay. He's thought this through. He's thinking higher level. He understands the mission that we need to accomplish. He understands the finances, you know, totally different conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. Your description there is reminding me one of the things that can be really useful. And it sounds like you were really effective helping him with this is helping to recognize sort of where are you around actually describing the real problem that you've got right now. And his real problem was that there wasn't clarity about sort of how this murky, you know, poorly framed project was going to go forward. But how do you frame the problem? What are the choices in front of you? And then when do you make a decision? And each of those is sort of, you know, in terms of a conversation with a supervisor, to your point, really a different kind of meeting. So I love how you helped him get sharp and clear on that so that he could progress. You know, if we have time, I would ask you to tell another story if you've got one. If we don't have time, you tell me what you know, what's up for you.
Yeah, let me think about. The net of that one is also confidence, right?
Yes.
That shift in confidence, you know, confidence is good, cocky is not, right? And there's a line, right? And assertive is good, aggressive is not, and there's a line. And I talk about those things a lot. It's okay to be assertive, but not aggressive. It's okay to be, energetic and passionate and all that, but not egotistical. And so there's that line. Let me think. So let's talk. We didn't spend a lot of time on the last chasm, which is the most complex and probably the whole podcast in and of itself. But that executive chasm is super complex because it's much different. Again, it's about it's more personal. It's more relationship. You know, you're a threat when you come into an executive situation and C-suite. You know, it's death match at that level at sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. You know, right. Is this guy going to be more powerful than me? You know, what if she is making a move to take over my team? You know, and so you have to cultivate those relationships and be strong enough, but not dominant and take over enough. So they need to know you're going to be a strong player on that team, but you're not going to, stab them in the back. One of the other, we've talked a lot about sort of the career and chasm side, but there's also, we've talked a little bit about the personal side as well. And I always think and plan in threes. I say that all the time, but there's, the personal, the professional, and then the third leg is, you could call it spiritual, you could call it, religious, whatever that is. And in my world, view of the world, you have to have all three. And ideally they're all equally balanced. In reality, there's, they're not always balanced, and your stool kind of, tips a little bit, but it should never fall over. You should always have three stools, but you might tip a little bit. They talk about the work-life balance, and I obviously critical, but it's not really a balance. It's a balancing act. And sometimes I have to lean in professionally, and sometimes your personal life suffers, and or vice versa. But one of the things, let me talk. We talk a lot about positive things, but one of the negative things at that executive chasm level that I coach people who want to get there or striving to get there. And I say, why? Sometimes it's even at that individual contributor manager level. Well, why? Why do you want to do that? And if I hear things like, well, because that's what I'm supposed to do, or I want more money, or I want the big title. Yeah, not the reason to go do that, right? Mm-hmm. That's going to be very short-lived. You need to have that passion to lead, or you have vision and those kinds of things. One negative at the executive level that people don't talk about is, and it was statistically true at GE when I was there many years ago, but I have to go find a more recent study, but more than 80% of divorces happen at that chasm jump level, from middle management, senior management, to executive management. Well, why? Wow. Well, it's because your lifestyle changes dramatically. You are all in at that level. You don't worry about, am I working 40 hours a week? Your personal and professional blend so much that your friends, the dinners, the events, the birthday parties, the celebrations become less and less family and friends. I'm not saying it goes away, but more and more your working quote unquote family. And I hate that term, business family, because that you don't fire your sister. Like it's not a family, right? You don't give your sister a performance review, right? But at that executive, that real executive level, your birthday party is your, you're the other, the CMO's daughter or whatever, it's that level, your business dinners, your travel. And if your spouse or significant other isn't on board with that, realizing that, some of that family and friend time is going to be less, and your working time, social time is going to be more, if they're not on board, it's a non-starter, right? It's a chasm that you can't go back over, but usually you don't. And those are some of the things, like, when you say you want to do these things, let's talk about what that means in your environment, in your company, in your position. And just sort of opening that up before people, go to execute and get over that chasm. And I don't mean to say that in a negative way. It's just opening the eyes to people to say there's a lot of great positive things about that, and leadership and having such impact on an organization and the individuals, and a lot greater impact on maybe the world at large if you think about it that way. But on the flip side, with every yes, you have a no, and with every no, you have a yes. And so you got to think about those trade-offs as you make these moves throughout your career.
Right, right. Well, and I think, and I'm hearing you describe this, I think recognizing that for every decision where you say yes, there are consequences to the yes that come with it. You don't get to say yes and not experience the consequences.
Exactly.
Right? Or no and not get the consequences.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. That's poignant. And you're right. I'm certain we could have do an entire episode about that. I think there's quite a bit of challenge, and I think sort of personal development learning. And I think you're highlighting of the choices, the motivations of why someone would want to do that. Certainly a rich area to explore. Here's the question I wanted to ask you about, sort of, and maybe this is a, you decide here, tell me how much time we have.
Yeah, let's go. We'll do one more question and then we'll see if we can wrap it up.
Okay. Based on where you are right now, you've described, these three chasms in your work with people in these areas. Based on where you are in your life right now, sort of looking forward, who's the ideal client that you really want to be working with? Someone who you can create that value for, and who's really going to push you, make demands on you in ways that are going to help you stretch and grow. Tell who is that sort of person? What can you paint a picture?
Yeah. Ooh, that's such a great question. And I really enjoy sort of these three-ish groups, right? Emerging leader, new entry, this individual contributor manager, and then the executive. But I will tell you, the most challenging are that last set, because it's much more nebulous. There is no clear cut answer. There's no prescribed process of here's how you do it, right? It's different in every organization. It's different for every person. Now, not that the other two aren't, right? Everyone is different from their job entry kind of or re-entry level, and then from individual contributor manager. But let me talk about the pros and cons of this senior level executive. The fun and exciting part is it's super complex, and you have to talk about who is on your side and who's not, and how do we gain favor, and how do we embrace your enemy, right? Trust, be closer to your enemies, and those kinds of things. I feel like I'm talking so negative about this exec C-level world, but I don't mean to be. But I guess I'll go one more negative. The other part about it is, I find, is the ego concept at that level. Yeah. Like, they've typically worked really hard, worked long hours, have learned tremendous amount, and feel and probably can that they can perform in this role right away. They're good to go. They have that confidence that, gosh, I wish I had slivers of that sometimes. That they're just, and that's hard to coach, right?
Right.
First, just remember, going way back to the early part of the conversation, the first step is just stepping back and acknowledging, I need some help. I need to talk to somebody about this. A lot of those at that level are like, I don't need help. I got this. I'm just, what does Todd have to add? What kind of value is Todd going to add? He's never been a chief executive officer. Yeah, but I've worked with a lot of them, and I've reported to them as well. And listen, there's a reason I'm not one. And sometimes you make that personal decision of, I'm not willing to invest at that level, at least at the organizations I've been a part of. So that's, to answer your question bluntly, that's the really challenging, really exciting, difficult, and we both learn in that perspective. Mm. I love to learn. But on the flip side, it's in a different way, equally as exciting, of sitting down with someone who's, says, I really, I'm getting out of college. I really don't have that much experience. And as you're talking to him, so I, just real quick story, I met with, in one of these mock interviews, I was interviewing someone in high school, not college, but someone who was in this marketing track at high school. And she had a pretty decent resume and some of the things she, in the high school world, you don't have a lot of job experience. Like it's more classes and maybe, babysitting, that kind of stuff. And she started, I started talking about, hey, what do you think you're going to do in college? What do you think about? Oh, I'm definitely marketing. I really like marketing. It's fun. It's like, oh, well, tell me why, what about that? And then we got into a resume and she kind of mentioned real quickly, real small, like, blah, blah, blah marketing. I'm like, well, tell me about that. Oh, well, I helped my dad owns a real estate firm and, their marketing was really terrible. Their website wasn't good. And they didn't have any social media presence or whatever. And over the summer, I took 4 months and I redid their website and I did this and did this. And I'm like, wow, that's really impressive. And it's not on here. Like that needs to be on here. Right. But then she started to elaborate on, well, and then a friend of my dad's asked me for help here. And then this, and then, and I said, wait, so you were getting paid for this, right? Oh yeah. Yeah. And I said, and I'm thinking to myself, do I tell this girl she has no reason to go to college because she's already has a marketing company? She literally had in a year and a half had 6 customers paying her, probably too little, to be frank. And, when I started to talk to her about that, I said, you realize first of all, it's not on your resume. And if you want to be into marketing and you want to get to a great school, if you put this on the resume, you're going to get some serious attention here. Second is you're probably charging too much. I'm too little and you should be charging way more, which would be more valuable than probably the college you're going to pay for. But don't tell any of your guidance counselors that I just said that to you. the third is the only difference. You have a marketing company right now. You just haven't put a name on it and put an LLC. And like literally go do that this afternoon because you need to do that, no matter what you decide to do, but your career path, let's say you go, 4 years or whatever your trajectory is for college and marketing, you come out, you have a company. You're ready to go. Plus you could be doing this stuff in college using your actual classroom experience and generating revenue. And, I don't care if you use it for beer money or you use it to pay for your college, but that's awesome. Like you can do this.
Right.
And like, again, the mind shift from the beginning of that conversation to the end.
Yeah.
The person that walked in to the person who walked out, 180 degrees difference. And what did I have? My part in that was just acknowledging that and reminding them of that. It's not rocket science. It was just, do you hear what you're saying? You say you want to do marketing. You are doing marketing and you're getting paid for it. And she was just like, oh, I never thought of it that way. I'm like, oh my gosh, holy mackerel. I wish I was that creative as you. Really, really, those are some of that's what keeps you coming back, right? And I wish I could tell you all the stories were like that. Many are, but those are the ones that like, wow, I had some minor little role in someone's life and in a more positive trajectory.
Right, right. I mean, in some way, bottom line, you're helping someone to see themselves differently in a bigger, in a much more expansive, much larger way. And ultimately, based on seeing themselves differently, position themselves differently for the future that they're going to step into.
Exactly. I
love those stories. Those are great.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, yeah. That was awesome. Thank you so much. I can talk for hours. And so we said this last podcast, we'll say it again. We could talk for hours on all of these topics and more, but I want to thank you for the millionth time to one, connecting, two, original podcast, three, turning the tables and having another great conversation around leadership and coaching and mentoring and how we as coaches, you in a slightly different way, of course, but how we can really help people. And I hope that the folks who are listening, I hope there's a couple nuggets of at least one of great information that they can take and use. That's what this podcast is all about. Really excited to continue to work together and really appreciate you taking time to give back to me, which is just so generous of you. Really appreciate it.
I love it. I get some insight from what you're sharing, and I hope as well that if people find something valuable, they'll reach out. It sounds like for you, for people listening, if they feel themselves at approaching a decision point around their career or a next step, they feel some uncertainty, they have some open questions, they're not sure what it's going to take, they sound like they're ready to reach out to you and, yes, and sort of get engaged and find out. That's what I'm taking away.
Yeah. ManageMeCoaching.com. Todd@ManageMeCoaching, just as it sounds, Todd@ManageMeCoaching.com. Reach out. We'll set up some time and we'll connect and see if it's worthwhile to have some further conversations.
Perfect. Lovely. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Ooh, I couldn't find it.